Mandan la misma atención del Estado al sufrimiento de los damnificados por el terremoto y el tsunami que dejó a miles de familias sin hogar y trabajos. El gobierno de Piñera afirma que no dialogará bajo esas condiciones. Elevado a la altura de un héroe mundial por el rescate televisado de los mineros, ahora Piñera acelera su agenda de derecha que busca privatizar sectores públicos como la educación, afirman sus críticos. Más de 20.000 documentos desclasificados del gobierno de Estados Unidos, donde se confirma Washington apoyó el golpe de Estado de 1973 contra el presidente Salvador Allende, fueron entregados al Museo de la Memoria y los Derechos Humanos de Chile. Los documentos fueron entregados por Peter Kornbluh, director del Chile Documentation Project de los Archivos Nacionales de la Universidad George Washington. Kornbluh declaró que los documentos recogen de forma muy clara la intervención de Estados Unidos en el golpe militar del 11 de septiembre de 1973 y su apoyo al régimen militar liderado por Augusto Pinochet. La documentación recoge una conversación que mantuvieron en junio de 1976 en Santiago el general Pinochet y el consejero de Seguridad Nacional y posterior secretario de Estado de Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger. En ella, Kissinger declaró a Pinochet: «Deseamos que el suyo sea un gobierno próspero. Queremos ayudarle y no obstruir su labor». Según el investigador Peter Kornbluh, Kissinger era el arquitecto del programa que intentó derrocar a Allende entre 1970 y 1973. En España, diferentes sectores denuncian la situación del pueblo saharaui, reprimido los últimos días por las fuerzas marroquíes, ante la indiferencia de los gobiernos europeos y estadounidenses y el propio Consejo de Seguridad de la ONU. El Sahara Occidental, una antigua colonia española, lleva 35 años de ocupación marroquí con la complacencia de España. Rafael Cuesta reporta desde Madrid.
Todos los grupos parlamentarios del Senado español han exigido al gobierno de Zapatero que asuma su protagonismo en el conflicto y tome las riendas para alcanzar una solución en el conflicto del Sáhara, además de reclamarle firmeza frente a Marruecos y censurar su posición tibia. Senadores de todos los partidos, incluido el socialista José Carracao, se reunieron el miércoles en la Cámara con representantes del Frente Polisario. En ese encuentro, el delegado del Frente Polisario en el Estado español, Bucharaya Bellún, les expuso la situación que se vive en el Aiún y subrayó la necesidad de una respuesta internacional firme ante los ataques marroquíes. Pese a que en la reunión estuvo el socialista José Corracao, que es el portavoz de Exteriores de su partido en el Senado, junto al senador del Partido de los Socialistas de Cataluña, Lluís María de Puig, ambos abandonaron la sala al término de la reunión y evitaron comparecer ante la prensa junto a los representantes del Frente Polisario y los senadores de todos los grupos parlamentarios que han coincidido en su condena a los hechos y en criticar la respuesta del gobierno español. Por su parte, el Frente Polisario no entiende cómo el gobierno de Zapatero puede decir que la razón para no condenar los ataques es porque necesita más información, con la de pruebas que tienen ya de lo ocurrido en el Sáhara Occidental. Escuchamos a Bucharaya Bellún, delegado del Frente Polisario en el Estado español.
Un muchacho, día 24, eso no hay que esperar. Que murió otro el día 8 atropellado, eso lo sabe todo el mundo. Que la intervención hubo el día 8, las imágenes están ahí de un campamento arrasado, quemado, está ahí. Que fuerzas militares estaban alrededor del campamento, están las imágenes, está ahí. Que periodistas fueron golpeados en Casablanca, está ahí. Que los diputados fueron expulsados del Ayuno, está ahí. Que diputados fueron expulsados de Casablanca, está ahí. Esto está ahí. ¿Cómo es posible decir que se necesita más información?
Hay que recordar que la ministra de Exteriores española, Trinidad Jiménez, sigue evitando condenar la masacre porque dice que no tiene información contrastada de los hechos. De esa manera, ignora los testimonios de activistas de derechos humanos y periodistas antes de ser expulsados por Marruecos del Sáhara. Los colectivos sociales, además, se muestran indignados por el cinismo de la política, ya que hace 7 años, estando el Partido Socialista en la oposición, la hoy ministra de Exteriores exigía en un acto en 2003 por la autodeterminación del Sáhara la actuación del entonces gobierno de José María Aznar y prometía que el Partido Socialista sí se comprometía a favor de la causa del pueblo saharaui. Hoy el discurso es completamente distinto. Escuchamos a la ministra Trinidad Jiménez en aquel acto del año 2003.
Hoy, después de tanto tiempo, y es verdad que se cumple el plazo para que se tome una decisión en Naciones Unidas, el Partido Socialista quiere pedirle al gobierno español, quiere exigirle al gobierno español que preside el Consejo de Seguridad de Naciones Unidas que tome una parte activa para atender esta reivindicación histórica, esta reivindicación legítima del pueblo saharaui que pueda dar satisfacción al derecho a la libre determinación. Eso es lo que hoy hay que pedirle al pueblo español, al gobierno español.
Mientras el pueblo saharaui y los colectivos sociales muestran su indignación por ese cinismo de la clase política, los últimos activistas en salir de El Aaiún, Isabel Terraza y Antonio Velázquez, denuncian lo que califican como un genocidio que sigue perpetrándose en el Sáhara Occidental.
Pues miren, en estos momentos nosotros somos testigos de que escuadrones de policías y militares en las noches aprovechan para usar la violencia, tumban las puertas, sacan a las personas y las torturan y muchas mueren víctimas de esas torturas y nosotros hemos sido testigos de eso. Hemos vivido la noche más larga de nuestras vidas escuchando cómo esos policías entraban a una casa de una manera muy violenta. Hemos escuchado los gritos con llantos, con gemidos de una persona que estaba siendo torturada en la calle donde nosotros estábamos.
Una represión completa por parte del gobierno marroquí. Nosotros realmente nos quedamos muy tristes y muy impotentes ante lo que está sucediendo y que nadie está interviniendo en este momento. Nosotros hemos sido víctimas y también hemos sido testigos de muchas cosas que han pasado ahí. Realmente podemos decirlo, hay las imágenes que lo comprueban, incluso que hemos enviado. La violencia con la que nos desalojaron del campamento de protesta y bueno, actualmente la situación está muy, pero muy complicada. De verdad es necesario que entre el Consejo de Seguridad de las Naciones Unidas.
Los activistas denuncian incluso la tensión vivida con las fuerzas de seguridad marroquíes en el momento de su expulsión. Les quitaron algunas pertenencias e incluso a Antonio Velázquez le acusaron del asesinato de un militar marroquí. Así lo cuentan ellos.
Pues la verdad que ha sido muy tenso, hemos pasado un momento muy desagradable, aunque en ningún momento hemos tenido miedo, hemos tenido siempre la cabeza muy alta. Y la verdad que cuando hemos llegado al aeropuerto la policía nos ha tratado de una manera muy desagradable, han tenido una actitud muy agresiva y nos han intimidado en todo momento. A mí me han sacado la melfa con fuerza, me han sacado el móvil de las manos con fuerza, me han sacado mis pertenencias también. Y bueno, la verdad que ha sido muy duro porque ha habido un momento que incluso nos han hecho agarrar un periódico con nuestra foto y nos han obligado a tomarnos una foto con el periódico abajo. Ellos querían que sostuviéramos el periódico con nuestras manos, nosotros nos hemos negado. Igualmente nos han tomado esa foto.
Yo quiero denunciar, aprovechar que a mí me culparon de la muerte de un militar ahí estando en el aeropuerto. De la sala de espera, a mí me llevaron a otra habitación para hacerme unas preguntas y ahí mismo me acusaron de la muerte de un militar porque todas mis pertenencias, según ellos, estaban a un lado de un militar muerto y el pasaporte mexicano que tengo y los documentos españoles que tenía en ese momento en el campamento, que se habían quedado en el campamento, el día de hoy me los entregaron diciendo que bueno, junto con mi pasaporte estaba una denuncia de que yo era culpable de la muerte de un militar, cuando sabemos muy bien que yo en todo momento tenía la cámara y que yo les envié las imágenes que ustedes han visto y que un minuto después estaba en la ciudad de El Aaiún tomando las fotos de la intifada. Entonces es simplemente imposible.
Los activistas acusan al gobierno español de bajarse los pantalones ante Marruecos. Afirman que al gobierno de Zapatero se le debería caer la cara de vergüenza porque está siendo responsable de las violaciones de derechos humanos en el Sáhara Occidental. Ellos anuncian por su parte que seguirán luchando para que se actúe y se condene la masacre.
Pues vamos a hacer todo lo que esté en nuestras manos para seguir difundiendo este genocidio, porque es muy importante que se actúe inmediatamente, que el Consejo de Seguridad de la ONU intervenga inmediatamente, que el gobierno español se posicione de una manera firme y contundente y condene la actuación violenta de Marruecos.
Queremos invitarlos a escribirnos con sugerencias de noticias que quieran que abordemos en el informativo Pacífica, noticias que los medios privados no investigan. Pueden escribirnos a nuestro correo electrónico en pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com. A los radioyentes de las emisoras que no programan el informativo Pacífica los viernes, queremos recordarles que la edición del viernes y de todos los días de la semana pueden escucharla en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a Más Voces de España, a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela, al diario La Jornada de México y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Stolen Land. That's from Leonard Peltier, POW, in the spirit of Crazy Horse. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is Robert Norse, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. In the studio with me is the ineffable Steve Plaich, losing city council candidate, winning local activist. And on the line, another one of those irritants to the city council, but more of a team player, Micah Posner, People Power's man in Santa Cruz. Hi, Micah.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Micah.
So I know we ran into each other yesterday, Micah, and you had told me that on Tuesday at the Public Works / Redevelopment Agency Committee joint, we don't allow
that much. That was Monday night.
Monday night. Is that true? Is it Monday night there, Micah?
Monday night, yep.
Oh, there you are. What can I say? Upbraided by my guest, or upstaged. In any case, there was an important victory, you said, that happened regarding the attempt to make some changes on King Street. You want to talk a little bit about that?
I hate to correct you again, Robert, but it wasn't about King Street.
Oh,
this time.
Dear. I resigned. Forget it. Anyway, there was some victory for somebody about something.
Right,
Go ahead.
I mean, anything that happens to these commissions isn't a victory, but it's more like a hopeful sign. You know, it's like because the commissions are made up of regular people that are trying to affect policy, they don't have any actual power. So I'm not calling it a victory, but I'm calling it, you know, a really nice moment, a good, you know, good, like a good dry run for city council. And what it's about is the city's climate action plan, which is it's a nice, dreamy document, but unless some changes happen to it, it's going to sit on the shelf next to the city's master transportation study and gather dust, because there's nothing in it currently that directs the staff to actually do anything. Apparently it's being written by consensus among staff. So our mission as people that care about the world's climate and people that care about democracy is to get some language into that plan that makes it so that staff will actually change the way they operate, especially in transportation. Transportation is our biggest problem.
Micah, didn't you have some language? Let me go back to my old favorite, the King Street bypass, to help old bikers who don't want to get mowed down on Mission Street. Wasn't there language that directed, actually from the city council itself, not just a commission, that fine old staff of ours to take some action, and they still didn't take any action? Is that accurate?
Yeah, here you are, Robert. We're talking about the world's climate, and you're tuned into democracy.
Well, the world's
climate. It's all related on the local scene.
Right. What I'm questioning, though, is whether commission's recommendations mean shit if we have a staff that isn't going to do diddly squat, even when the council, the great and powerful city council, directs them to act.
Well, these recommendations were specifically around policy about who actually decides issues of infrastructure and planning. We learned our lesson from King Street, and what we're attempting to do now is go back and change the way decisions are made so that the public actually has more power over it.
But clarify the new and exciting difference is that if the city council adops this commission's
program, hold on one sec, family's home.
Perhaps Steve can fill in while you're dealing with your family situation.
No, all I'm saying is that what I appreciated from Monday night. And
sorry, one sec, Robert.
Oh, there he is.
There he is. Go
ahead, Michael Posner fan.
Sorry, I'm going to have to take 1 minute here to grab the baby and
family matters family, take precedence, apparently. And that's an interesting comment. I mean, that one of the voters or perhaps council members of tomorrow.
Yes, indeed.
So, okay.
No, what I was going to say, Michael, what I appreciated from Monday night, what I gleaned from that anyway, was that while it's a draft climate action plan, at least people power was able to suggest some language. Ecology Action was there suggesting some language. Transition Santa Cruz was suggesting some language. Certainly it's neither a plan nor is it any kind of measurable action, as you pointed out. And that's what they have to do if they're going to revise that draft and actually make it a document that can bring us more energy independent, better transportation, more viable alternative in transportation, the things that you have suggested, that's where they have to start.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's more of a, sorry, Tamara, I'm going to talk on the phone for a few more minutes, okay? That's my daughter. It's more of a question of, will it be implemented? And what we suggested were very specific ways in which the plan should be changed so as to make it so it actually gets implemented.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about some specifics here? Because I'm not clear that any of us listening, myself included, give a shit. So why should we give a shit about this plan? How does it affect poor people in Santa Cruz, homeless people, and so forth?
Well, it mostly affects our commitment to the environment and our care for wanting to be helpful with regard to global warming and not be part of the problem. So although, you know, helping the environment often affects poor people and regular people because, you know, helping the environment is often the same as helping humans as opposed to perpetuating the status quo. It does, it'll make change happen. So
city staff and environmentalists are often concerned with protecting various parts of the environment, which don't include the homeless population often. In fact, there are concerns that the homeless population is despoiling the environment, or that even any attempts to provide campgrounds for the homeless would further despoil the environment. So, I don't know.
Climate action plan doesn't really have anything to do with homeless, to answer your question.
Right, well, but I guess the reason I asked you on, because I kind of intuited, even though I had the misimpression it had to do with King Street, that, you know, you were talking about a victory around changes in how the city can actually get the staff off its collective butts to do something rather than to shape whatever is put into its own little donut-shaped desires, wholly, so to speak. But, you know, what is different about this? What kinds of have you learned from your King? First of all, explain why the King Street thing got blocked by the staff. Explain what it is, and explain how this is different, and that now you're if the city council.
Well, I don't know that it's going to be different, but we're working on it.
If the city council adopts the commission's report, how will things change, even for so, you know, arcane and seemingly distant an issue as global warming, and this can maybe affect us because we're concerned about getting the city council to do something
right.
in spite of the staff, although God help us with this city council.
What happened with King Street is that the way that Public Works decides on projects is that they make this list of projects called the Capital Improvement Project List, and then they tie in all this other stuff to it, these different revenue streams and all that. And then at the last minute, like, when the plan is already, you know, done, they go to the city council and they say, what do you think of the plan? The city council says, oh, well, that seems fine. What about, you know, blah, blah, blah. But they can't really change the plan very much because it's too complicated for them to just sit up there on the little dais and change the plan. You know, it's just... doesn't work that way.
Well, you know, Mike, I was particularly disappointed. You'll recall maybe 2 or 3 months back, whenever it was, they were talking about King Street, and Catherine Byers attempted to at least put a placeholder, a few dollars into the fund so it would be funded rather than unfunded.
Exactly.
And she attempted to do that and got a vote in the council, and it didn't fly. I was disappointed because I thought that would at least indicate that they had some willingness to be serious about it, put some money into it.
And what we're talking about is a King Street bicycle.
Yeah.
Right. A year ago, there was the exact same motion made by Mike Rotkin. They did tell the staff to put it in the funded category, and the staff just completely ignored them.
Yeah, that was my recollection as well.
And the council did zilch about it, suggesting, oh, at a future time, this will come up again naturally in the course of events. I think that was Don Lane's argument. But this, you say, this action on Monday night, there is a new dawn. A new door has opened. The windows are open. The whole house is being cleaned out. What's changed now?
I think it's more of like... a side door is partly open, but I'm a little hopeful. What we've done is we've drafted specific language about how the process should be different. Mm-hmm. So if the language passes the city council, which of course is a huge if, then the capital improvement project list would be ranked by the climate staff according to how each project affects the climate.
Rather than what? I'm trying to understand what change has happened. I'm not clear yet. You haven't made it clear to me as a novice who wasn't at these meetings.
Well, no change has happened yet. I've made that clear.
No. What change is going to happen if it's implemented? This is about the third time I've said this.
So the public will have more information to get more involved with the capital improvement project list way before the very last minute.
And specifically, is that going to happen if it's passed? At what stage will they get involved? What kind of language has changed? What exists now and what will exist if concretely?
One thing is that the capital improvement plan will be rated according to how it affects the environment.
Exactly. They'll run it through a matrix, basically. And rather than just having capital improvements be a matter of what funds are available, they will be more dependent on what are more environmentally sensitive and what are more environmentally sound.
Right. And then if the council is going to vote, for example, to widen, you know, Highway 1 over the river, they'll have to do it in the teeth of a clear, you know, D or F rating on the capital improvement.
Absolutely. That's right.
So in other words, this will require for a variety of projects, even such things as King Street or Bromer, Broadway, Bypass, all these projects, Poganip and so forth, building a, you know, Eastern Access Road, through all these will require a new standard.
Right. They'll be graded, and so it'll be clear to the council and the public, you know, that if the council's messing with the environment, that they can't hide behind.
It's similar to the process you're going through with desal, where the environmental concerns are weighted, the reliability of the technology is weighted, the maintenance is weighted. So if you give more weight to things that are more environmentally sound, I think you're going to get more environmentally sound projects, and I think you're going to reduce our carbon footprint, and that's what makes it better for people if you're homeless and homed alike.
Depends who does the weighing.
Important change is that, so in the Climate Action Plan, as well as the past general plan and the past natural restoration study, there were goals for reducing car use, but there was no specific language that said that the public works staff had to adopt those goals. So we had a goal of reducing cars by 30%, but when the public works department forecast traffic, they plan on increasing cars by 5, 10, 15%.
Exactly, yeah.
So we changed the language, or we're trying to change the language, in the plan that says that whatever goal we set in this plan, the Public Works Department is mandated to use that goal when they imagine how much traffic there'll be. So there will be no reason, you know, if we're imagining we're going to have 30% less cars, there's no reason to widen, you know, Highway 1 or do some of these other projects because we won't have congestion. So it's sort of a, it forces them to take whatever this plan is.
Now, do we have precedents that this kind of language applied to other kinds of legislation in our city has actually done that, forced the staff to act? Because I think we have probably some of the most slippery staff around. I mean, I'm serious. I don't want to give people false hopes and make a lot of pretty talk if we're not making or even proposing to make real changes that will lock in the staff. I mean, they can't be arrested. They can't really be fired. They're there for as long as Martine Bernal wants them or until they engage in criminal behavior. So what's going to get them to act any differently if the staff decides, nah, we don't want to do it?
Well, we're doing the best we can. We're making specific language so that the council passes it. I think we can sue them over it because it'll be part of the general plan.
Right.
If they don't follow
the
plan.
Exactly right. It's also being read tonight at the Planning Commission meeting, so that's another
opportunity. Yeah, that's why it's good to come on tonight, because the same process, although it's the first step of the same process, is happening at 7 o'clock at the Planning Commission meeting.
Exactly.
And where is that going to be?
It's at City Hall.
City Council Chambers.
That's 809 Center.
809 Center. Mm-hmm. This is the first reading of it, so we haven't recommended very specific language. In this case, we're just trying to get people to come and give the basic ideas, and we expect the commissioners will like some of them and will want to run with them, and then they will ask staff to develop those ideas. Staff will likely refuse to do so, and then we'll do the hard work.
Well, I'm sure you'll get a careful listening from David Forrester, who just happens to be
on the
a member of
planning.
People Power.
Yeah,
also on the Planning Commission.
And a good guy.
City Council candidate, yes.
Right. Well, so David will, there'll be a first round. David will try to press the staff, I'm guessing, to do some of these things. Staff won't do it, and then we'll work with him and others to bring back very specific language in the second round. So that'll be a hopefully an interesting meeting. The planning issues are mainly around parking, changing the system whereby we hugely subsidize automobile parking or automobile housing, if you want to look at it that way, to the detriment of the environment and also to the detriment of people that live here that don't own cars, can't afford to own cars, or choose not to own cars.
That brings cars up an issue. Need
yeah.
houses.
That brings
people
up,
don't
yeah,
need
that
houses.
Brings up a question,
cars
Mike. When the Ecology Action Cruzio were refitting the Center Building, they were going to build a bike park over there somewhere. Have you heard anything about the plans for that?
I have, but I don't feel like I know them well enough to...
Yeah, neither do I. I just remember from their groundbreaking ceremony, they said, oh, we're going to build a bike park over here and stuff. But it's an example of what can be done with
well,
some cars.
Ecology Action is, they're trying to sell back the parking that came with the building across the street because they don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And the city is trying to force them to keep it. It's like this whole... I don't know all the whole details. It would be interesting to talk to Ecology Action, but I know that they've been trying hard to not subsidize car parking as much as the Sentinel did, and they're having a hard time with it.
So what's the relation between this meeting and Monday's meeting?
It's a similar, they're both about the climate action plan, but the public works is ostensibly about transportation. This is ostensibly about planning, although parking is part of planning. So in terms of the dynamics with the staff, it's the same. The other difference is that the planning department is much more forward-thinking and I think honestly cares more about the plan and the climate. So it's not quite as... they may be more amenable to actually taking suggestions.
And if you've ever been over there, I'm sure you have, to any of the Planning Commission meetings, they are extremely sensitive to environmental concerns. I mean, I went over there. They had the review of the 1930 Ocean Project next to the cemetery, and I went over there, and they had a huge neighborhood group come over and complaining about the mercury that was going to be developed from crematorium and things like that. And the Planning Commission gave them a very broad-based hearing of that, and in fact tabled it until they come back with more information about that.
Right.
So they have,
that
they have
kind of stuff is pretty well understood, and it's part of the environmental review process. And I appreciate that, but we're looking for some more profound changes about how we subsidize cars, how it hurts the
environment. Yeah, of course.
And people.
Of course, these are all content-based issues that concern the two of you more than they concern me, although I'm sure they concern all of us.
Bye-bye.
I'll help you.
Maybe.
If you got rid of your car, Robert, you'd have a cheaper place to live.
However, my interest, and the reason I called you on the air, rather than to get you to promulgate your questionable anti-car views, is to determine if we can actually hold the staff accountable. Now, I've heard some jabber over here from Steve that, just take them to court. Do you have attorneys ready to take these clowns to court if the city council is bold enough to adopt this plan and the staff continues to ignore these things?
I have to hold a bunch more fundraisers, but yeah, we could do it if we had to.
Sure.
And can you recall, and just for those of us who are feeling faint of heart and discouraged, give us some examples in the last two decades of successful court actions that have made the staff shape up.
Well, there was the petition so you wrote that stopped the Coast Hotel.
Right, that's one. Anything else?
That's one that pops to mind first. But, you know, often these things are worked out behind closed doors.
Indeed, too often.
If you put in strong enough language, then the staff change their tact, and everyone, including us, thanks them and says, what a great idea, you did a great job.
Give an example of when that happened.
Yes. When that happened.
When it behind closed doors, you know, when all of us just weren't allowed, because, I mean, we want to be kind of, you know, advised.
Well, on Mission Street, the police were completely opposed to, and King Street, they were completely opposed to trying to give direction to cyclists to take the lane, which is the safest place for cyclists to ride, Mission and King and other streets. And eventually, in part because of, ironically, Public Works being really helpful and supportive, so, you know, it's a complicated world. They, you know, there's now signs on Mission Street that mostly denote you should take the lane, and now the Public Works Department has started to put up other signs that are more clear, as well as put sheros on King and all that. So there's never been a public statement that the police finally gave in, but
there was substantive change there.
Things have changed, yeah.
So tonight at 7, what items are on? This is simply all about the climate.
All about the climate action.
Climate
action.
There'll
be people, our members there, who are well versed in this, and if people are interested, you can definitely find one of them and get the scoop and engage in a little bit of hopeful democracy.
Whether
it all turns out, you know.
I'm all for that.
You just got to keep working.
Yep.
Well, Micah, thanks for calling in. Give my regards to the kids and whoop it up at the meeting. I expect a full report.
Take care.
Talk to you soon, Micah.
All right. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides you're listening to, not a show about exciting climate plans or how cars are a bad thing or a good thing, although that does impact homeless people who don't usually have cars and who are, of course, mowed down by cars and preempted by cars.
How about those homeless vets that may get their home back?
Ah, the homeless vets. That's a very interesting question. And indeed, it was the subject of a rather way off target story in today's Sentinel by Curtis Alexander, which I happen to have with me. You're pointing to yourself, Steve, with a annoying grin on your face. What does all this mean?
Curtis Alexander wrote a fine article on the Friends of Thanksgiving, and we are much indebted. I have not read Curtis's article today about the court judgment in the Vets Hall case.
Ah, I'm going to actually draw it up on online. But, you know, for you and I and numerous vets and other people like Bob Patton, who you've spoken with on a number of occasions, and who has been actually a human rights activist around homeless issues for many years, we've attempted to raise the issue of why the county is refusing to allow vets back into the building that they're mandated to use, and why they're refusing to acknowledge and accept the architectural studies done by the engineers that the vets themselves hired that essentially contradicted the one study by the county's engineer guy. And my concern, of course, was to get the vets to take some action, and that hasn't happened other than court action. But there was a jury trial. Maybe you can describe, Steve, what that jury trial decided as far as I can get over my hiccups.
Well, I think that the evidence that the plaintiffs put on, the vets, was that the seismic problems, that the seismic deficiencies that the Vets Hall was experiencing were not on the order of $1.4 million to fix, as the county had asserted. And it was their opinion that the repairs could be properly done for about $100,000, that they could have their own folks in there, and that they could safely occupy those areas of the building that were seismically safe during the time when any of this refit was going on. I think the judge agreed with them in principle, and that's why the judgment was in their favor. They will now go through a negotiation process. They were set for what they call a case management conference, which means between now and early January, plaintiffs and the respondent will talk about what they can do in terms of reaching a stipulated judgment, a stipulated agreement. And according to the terms of that, the vets will either be able to reoccupy their building, they'll be able to make the repairs themselves, be able to contract out for that perhaps, but the bottom line is
not a word of what you said appears in Curtis Alexander's article.
Rather, he says, and this is the headline of the article, and I'm not saying you're wrong. No. I think you're right. That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least from what you said, and I think what...
Sorry, I should be talking into my mic instead of into your mic across the room.
Right.
The actual Sentinel article does not state anything of the kind or raise the issue of the vets being displaced from their building and that this being, should we say, inappropriate in terms of the amount of money for repairs. He talks rather about the fact that the vets were given inadequate alternate accommodations over at Emmeline and that that is really the concern that the jury had, and I guess it really didn't retire for very long. It was a brief trial. It was a long trial, but a brief
Well, the trial started Monday, and the judgment was rendered yesterday. So, no, it was a brief trial in terms of any kind of civil litigation.
Yeah, I mean, the way he describes the mess, this is according to Curtis Alexander in the Sentinel, began when county officials closed the vets hall because of seismic safety concerns. He doesn't go into the fact that there's a dispute about the seismic safety concerns, that the vets have wanted to reoccupy the building. It's really that the vets are complaining that Emmeline Street is too far away and too hard to reach, and that it's a form of negligence in providing alternate accommodations. That's what the substance of this article looks
like. Well, had that been the case, then the county would have been the plaintiff, you know, arguing that the respondents, being the vets, were unresponsive to their offers of alternate space and that they should be compelled to occupy these 8,000-square-foot premises at Emmeline and forget about ever reoccupying the county building. You know, so their adversarial positions would have been reversed had that been the case, but that's simply not the case.
You're not criticizing Curtis Alexander's
reporting. No, I'm
not.
I'm just saying, you know, from what I understand about the litigation and from what the real gravamen of the litigation is that the vets had two structural engineering studies done themselves, some seismic engineers, and said that while there may have been some seismic problems in there, that they could be fixed for the relatively relatively modest figure of $100,000 and not $1.4 million.
Yeah. Well, that's not in the story at all. Mm. What's in the story is simply that there was, and I will quote from the story by our Sentinel on the scene, a brilliant reporter, Volkman, it's a little ambiguous. No new options for accommodating the vets exist at this time, according to county officials. County officials don't have the money for the estimated $1.4 million of repairs needed at the vets hall. An unchallenged figure in Curtis Alexander's story.
Yeah.
No mention of there being any disagreement in court about how much it's going to cost or whether there needed to be a nine-month delay or whether the county was negligent in fixing up the building. It's rather that they were negligent in providing inadequate alternative facilities, is what I understand.
I'm certain the vets wouldn't have taken them to court just to make the point that they didn't like the alternative.
I'm talking about the shoddy reporting of this damn reporter. It pisses me off.
Well,
and, of course, there's nothing
know.
New about that. But I think it's really important that we clarify that because people rely, myself included, to some extent on the Sentinel for at least a sort of kind of, you know, ballpark discussion of what's going on, particularly in areas that we're not really conversant with. You know, that's the problem.
I think, Robert, that's a good point, because if their impression of people is the only disagreement is that the county is offering the vets alternative venues and they're saying, no, we don't want that for this and that reason, if that's the entire substance of the disagreement between the county and the vets, that's entirely misleading.
Yeah.
It's an extremely complex question. I think that if you raised awareness more in terms of what the county has done, what the vets assert that they can do, then you would come to some understanding of what the real problem
is. I mean, the second sentence reads, the verdict reached Wednesday, which followed 2 days of court testimony, caps a high-profile dispute over whether the county's effort to provide space for veterans at a satellite government campus was sufficient. And that's what this article is all about.
Well,
so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think there was an article in the paper the previous day or on Monday where they had said flatly that the county had offered the vets 8,000 square feet at Emmeline Complex, and they said, no, we don't want that because it's too far for our vets to go. They have to take buses. It's inconvenient, and it is. There's no question. So they just had simply turned that venue down. It's not like it was the substance of any kind of litigation.
You know, I'm looking at the comments online to see if anybody else brings up the issue, and I guess...
Some other prescient political minds and anyone current on the issues in our city?
There's some criticism of Neil, the supervisor, Neil the Elder Coonerty,
Well, he's only one supervisor.
He's only one supervisor. He's the chair of the board of supervisors, I understand.
Well, Tony Camp was president last time I looked. So
really?
Neil
was the chair anymore?
Neil was president before him.
Right, but I don't know. I mean, the point is, he's one of five well-paid,
well, the reason he gets
supervisors.
Much criticism, Robert, is that his district is downtown Santa Cruz.
That's one of the reasons he gets so much criticism. Another has to
do with this issue,
decisions.
And this issue in particular.
Well, he also has some, right. But I think he has a responsibility to deal with the issue, and he is not in a meaningful way. At least I haven't heard his voice saying, you know, the vets should be allowed to back in there immediately. Maybe I missed this. Maybe you noticed this.
No, I'm certain that he hasn't said that.
Well, why not? I mean, unless he feels the engineering study of the county needs
and
to be...
And my understanding was they had two engineers in. They did two different studies.
Well, I thought there were two different studies done by the vets and
yes.
one study
yes.
done
oh, yes.
by
That's
the
right.
county.
I
does the one study
you.
Done by the county in some way trump the two by the vets? Perhaps so. You know, perhaps it was more carefully done. Perhaps it's truer. I don't know.
No.
But I didn't hear any discussion of the details by the supervisors. And frankly, I didn't hear any discussion by the damn vets who could have been publicizing this issue endlessly over the last year, but have not, except to kind of make vague claims. Now, people said to me, well, the vets are disabled. You know, the vets are trying to work things out behind the scenes. The vets have hired attorneys to talk about it. And I got to tell you, well, I've told you before, it doesn't impress me much. It makes me sad. And I'm glad that now they're going to sit around and wait till January for Judge Volkmann to come back and start talking about the issue.
Well, no, the parties are going to be talking about the issue between now and then. The part
right.
of the case management conference is the parties get together in the interim and try to reach some stipulated agreement between themselves.
Right. But the question, I mean, that's a good point. But it seems to me that. You know, the issues have been pretty clearly laid out.
Well,
There's nothing new that we need to know.
I think you're right. One thing you have to understand is that the gravamen of this litigation, as far as I know, was the vets' attempt to regain access to their premises. They wanted the building back.
Not according to Curtis Alexander. Come on, now, I can't believe Curtis. I mean,
regardless of what the vets have done or have not done in their own defense, I don't think they have ever abandoned the hope of being able to return to that building. I've never heard one vet say, we're never going to get back into the building. We can't get back into the building. Let's look elsewhere. You know, let's see what we can do. You know, my impression from talking to several of the vets over time is that they want to be able to reoccupy that building. That is their building. You know, it's a special place for them. It's where veteran services are administered, among other things. It holds a special place as far as veterans are concerned, and they should be able to occupy that building unless there is some compelling reason why they can't. And I think that maybe the judge, although they may not, and here's maybe some callers in, will let us know more about
it. I'm afraid this is probably going to be...
is it DCD?
This is going to be one of our Berkeley confreres calling in about People's Park. Let's see what's going on there. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Steve.
Hey, Robert and Steve. This is not Berkeley. This is Santa Cruz.
Okay.
First of all, I am in no way going to defend the Santa Cruz Sentinel. So let's just have that as a premise. However, I didn't read the court briefs. I didn't go to the trial. It sounds like neither of you guys did. So even though the vet's underlying, desire is to get the vets all back,
right.
That might not have been their legal strategy. So before you go, you know, totally off on Curtis Alexander, he might be reporting accurately what the trial was about. I mean, because maybe that's, it sounds like, I did read the article, and it sounded like what I inferred from the article was that that was their legal strategy. That's where that was what their lawyers thought they could win on, that the county, there's a law that says the county has to accommodate vets, and they weren't being accommodated adequately. So, I don't know, but I just think before you totally go off on this reporter, you should have the facts straight yourself.
And well,
I don't know if you do, because...
I wasn't at the trial caller, and that's a fair call. And I want to give Curtis Alexander his due, in spite of the doo-doo, as I put it, because if you look at his November 15th article, vets say new quarters on Emmeline Avenue won't work. You may have read that story. It was in the paper a couple days ago.
I read the one that I just...
You read the
well, day. Maybe that was the one that I don't know.
Actually mentions the issue toward the end of the article, admittedly, but it does mention the issue, and it does kind of begin with the shutdowns, Veterans Memorial Building, provide vets the benefits they deserve, and he talks about the difficulties more specifically, but he also points out that there's... The Veterans Council initially had argued the closing the building went overboard, citing an independent review, and asked the judge to reopen the hall. That request has so far been denied, and the group has turned its attention to addressing problems at the new site. So you're right in that regard, that that's what they were, you know, that's what they're trying to get. And I think your point is well taken. I guess my concern is, you know, it seems to me the community's interest is served in not ignoring the broader issue,
yeah,
and the more basic issue.
You just said that he didn't. You just said that he wrote an article on November 15th that addressed the broader issue and also...
Well, mentions it.
Hang on.
Mentions it.
Also, when the county shut it down, that was extensively covered by the Sentinel. So once again, I don't want to be defending the Sentinel because I think the Sentinel sucks.
Right.
Okay? So don't like...
I don't want to hear you talk that way about the Sentinel.
I just think... What I heard from you guys seemed a little bit unfair that, you know, it sounded to me, and I read the article, today's article, it sounded like he was just reporting on the, you know, the issue in the trial itself. And you know, you yourself were saying you were kind of upset that they were just going to court. And, you know, I mean, when you go to court, you're constrained by...
Right, but the fact that it was brought up in court at the beginning of the week and mentioned in passing, we have to say, not substantially, but the last few paragraphs by Curtis Alexander in his first article, indicates to me he's aware of what was going on. I get the feeling that maybe he's not really aware of what's going on, or maybe he has a deadline.
Well, I don't, you know, and also they've got editors and they've got...
For sure,
so
for sure.
I just think, you know...
Let's give Curtis a C-minus on this.
There's enough legitimate stuff to, like, criticize the Sentinel on that it just seemed like it was a little bit unfair. And also, what Steve had said about if, you know, that were true, then the county would be the plaintiffs and the vets would be the defendants. That's not how it works. The plaintiff is whoever files the lawsuit. So,
of course, but I'm saying if the issues were reversed.
No, I mean... If the issue were reversed, and what you said, if it were as the Curtis Alexander described in the article, then the county would be the plaintiff, and that's just not how lawsuits work. Lawsuits work. Someone feels that they're aggrieved, and they sue the other party.
Well, and what I'm saying is that if the county would have felt that they were aggrieved by the vets turning down the venue that they had offered them, then they would have gone to court and said, compel the vets to accept the premises that had been offered.
No. Why? I mean, well, that's not how it works. So the county...
Guys, let me cut this short because I think you made your point. And I got another problem.
Right.
I got an incoming call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. At least it should be. It's supposed to be coming in on the same line. So if Zachary Running Wolf is actually listening to this up in Berkeley, he's the guest who is a... Berkeley City Council candidate in past elections, an activist who may have done some tree sitting himself in Berkeley's People's Park, which is a user-developed park famous for the community's refusal to accept University of California dictates, fences, cops, National Guardsmen, university interference, attempts to bulldoze the park over the years. And we're going to... That's not the sound, unfortunately, of... our phone. That's the sound of Steve Plaich's phone. Zachary has been a supporter of the right of people to use the park of all stripes, whether they're poor or rich, homeless or housed, black or white, you know, and so forth. University students or just complete slackers, who knows? Although who knows, who's to say that aren't the university students themselves aren't slackers. Anyway, he should be calling in soon, and I hope he will. He said he would. I'm going to kind of give a little background, if I can find it, on People's Park. And I apologize to the last caller for kind of cutting off the call, but I think we'd covered the substance of it. And hopefully we'll have Bob Patton in the studio on Sunday when I do a longer show from 9:30 to 1, and we can talk about the implications, what the vets are likely to be doing, what people who want to be supportive can provide for the vets to actually move this process further, faster. And no doubt some more attacks on the poor Sentinel. And, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this particular issue, and I'm going to stop talking about it for that reason. But there are things I do want to talk about. And, again, one of them has to do with what's going on up in Berkeley. And I'm looking at the... we've talked a lot about... I've talked a significant amount about KPFA's internal disputes, and I've tried to present a number of different sides to the issue. That's KPFA is the listener-supported FM radio station that's been around since 1949 that has become a multi-million dollar business in the hundreds of millions, I believe, now. And it's the subject of a major dispute now between what I guess I perceive as entrenched staff and volunteers and listeners who have been able through a created electoral process to change the nature of the Pacifica board. The Pacifica board oversees KPFA, KPFK, WBAI, and at least, I guess, two other, maybe it's three other radio stations around the country. And there's been a lot of concern that KPFA has been getting vanilla, kicking out labor people, abusing, the rights of volunteers to organize, supporting salaries for entrenched staff. That's the argument of the critics of the people that have been the critics of KPFA, and whereas those who are now demonstrating outside KPFA were claiming that the new management, the new people coming in, listener supported people elected, are trying to use a hit list to destroy violating existing union rules, though it's not been really clear. The defenders say it's seniority and so forth. Anyway, Berkeley is an area that I'm trying to cover, and another one of those areas is People's Park. And here's something from People's Park. The Ohlone name for people is Mawikma. People's Park has experienced some overzealous clear-cutting and pruning. The cops are supposedly trying to bust drug offenders, which is stupid because if they can't do that already, they must not be trying very hard. The park actually needs the trees. This is really a defense of the trees in the park. The ecosystem is beginning to dry out, and pretty soon it won't be People's Park. It will be People's Dust Bowl. UCB... Now stop that laughing, Steve.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. UCB would love nothing more than to build more tenement slums. I mean to say co-opted student housing and soccer fields and the like, etc. It's a 41-year-old protest. What can I say? The trees on the east especially don't need to be pruned for any reason, and the smaller trees that they hack and slash on the west side could have been easily replanted elsewhere. The UCB administration is run by a pack of vicious fascist dogs. This is written by a guy called Darren Bauer, by the way. Actually, he has his real name, so hey. He calls UCB administrators vicious fascist dogs. Their campus police, rent-a-cops, aren't any better. The hippies returned to the land back to the people because the administration couldn't move fast enough. I suppose they want to waste more money on policing and reinforcing the totalitarianism that their administration dictates. Tree sitters, welcome. If you want to go online, you can look at indiebay.org/eastbay. See some pictures of a guy I know, actually, up in Berkeley, who is kind of watering the trees. And
of course, we in the studio have always been against vicious fascist dogs.
Yeah, so. When we're not being called vicious
fascist
dogs.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Actually, you know, this tree-cutting thing, it reminds me of what was done here recently to the place the drum circle moved when it was forced away from the farmer's market in the summer by the police and by, the commercial interests masquerading as farmers that expanded the farmer's market, the Wednesday farmer's market in downtown Santa Cruz. They moved first to one parking lot, then to another, but finally to the area across from CVS on Soquel Avenue. Really kind of a nice, shady spot. You might have been up there, Steve, and seen it.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, absolutely.
You know, people
very
would,
nice.
There was a nice all Sunday or all Wednesday drummers would drum. Huff actually met there, and Maybe the reason they went after it was Huff planned the Peace Camp 2010 at that very spot.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's far enough removed, really, from kind of the urban canyon effect that our downtown has that you would think that they would have been able to drum in peace up there without having the entire landscape denuded of any kind of vegetation.
You know, and that's what was so shocking, because there were some really nice trees providing shade. I mean, they weren't, you know, 1,000-year-old redwoods, but they were substantial trees that had been there for... I can't say. I'm not really an agriculturalist in that regard or an arborist.
And they were summarily replaced with a patch of dirt.
Yeah, they were replaced with dirt and a little keep-out sign, you know, a triangular keep-out sign. I was assured by, was it Martine Bernal or was it Danette Shoemaker? I talked to both of those people. I talked to a third person, I think it was Steve Hammack, actually, the superintendent of Parks and Rec, who told me that this had been planned for a long time. They were engaging in, improvement, at both ends of the Soquel Bridge.
That's this strange because, you know, Dad Shoemaker thinks you're a very handsome man.
Yeah, Danette and I are just good friends. Let's make that clear. And Danette, you know, this is around, then, of course, about a month or two later, or actually around the same, well, about a month later, the city, under Danette Shoemaker's direction, with Martine Bernau and police chief, acting police chief Kevin Vogel, in agreement, ruled the entire city council area, the grounds, as well as the whole library grounds, for the first time in Santa Cruz history that I've heard of, off, out of bounds, and a forbidden no trespassing zone at night.
Yeah, and certainly we talked about this, and evidently they circumvented whatever process I like to talk about in terms of issues and rulings and changes in ordinances or changes in regulations that usually come down through commissions and the city council and public comment and things like that. There was none of that.
Right. I mean, actually, Danette Shoemaker, or was it Mike Rotkin? He was mayor at the time in 2006. Passed Danette Shoemaker's proposed law that she be given kind of executive power to designate no-go zones and hours, not just in these areas, but in everything that the Parks and Rec has regulation over all around the city, which includes Pacific Avenue, the Pogonip, and also can be expanded at the apparently discretion of the city manager. So she, but you know, they changed the language. Previously, such attempts to shut down such areas or restrict hours had to go through the Parks and Rec Commission.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
As a consequence of the legal change in 2006, you had to do it in consultation with the Parks and Rec. You didn't have to get their okay. But Shoemaker admitted to me, as I said at least five or six times on the radio, that she didn't do that because they weren't meeting at the time, and she and Martine Bernal and Police Chief Vogel felt it had to be done. I mean, there were such crimes, you know, sleeping, lying on the grass, holding up political signs at night, that were just, you know, intolerable to the management of the city hall, you know. And
those aren't reasonable place, time, and manner restrictions on free speech?
Well, obviously they felt they were reasonable place, time, and manner, and they probably would be defended as such. You know, I mean, we could take them to court and say, as you've already said, they didn't consult with Parks and Rec. They didn't even use the weak 2006 law to shut off areas at the library and at City Hall and at the police station as well.
But they were clever enough not to leave a paper trail either.
And when we attempted to get any public documents, there was nary a public document. So the ridiculous claim is that there were no work orders to set up signs. There was no discussion or debate by email. This all happened in a mist. And I am left speechless with admiration at these fascist dogs. And I guess by fascist, what am I going to say? People who believe in, it's not really the word, it's those who believe in circumventing community power and restricting public space at the whim of a bureaucrat, and also doing so, in this case, to shut down political protest. I mean, there was no other reason to do it. They weren't seeing massive vandalism. They didn't declare the area outside the city attorney's office, for example, a zone closed at night, even though the city attorney's office, he had his door burned.
Well,
by
that's
his
exactly,
door
yeah.
firebomb.
Exactly what we were talking about with Micah earlier about public process, for good or for ill, but public process nonetheless.
I mean, where there was a problem, they didn't approach. In areas where there was political dissent and discussion, although some would say that the assault on the city attorney's door probably had something to do with the sleeping ban as well. They didn't make a move. And, of course, it was private property rather than public property. But, you know, it's depressing. Anyway, I don't hear any calls from our dear, good friend Zachary Running Wolf. Let's see if there's any more in this article. You can again see this guy up in a tree, sitting in a tree, smoking a cigarette. Poverty is not a crime, and that's about all we've got on that issue. So let me say that phone lines are open, since it looks like Zachary is either not calling in or maybe got discouraged because he got bumped into the call of the previous caller, and nothing against the previous caller. We're still waiting for a call from Curtis Alexander explaining himself, but, of course, that's unlikely to happen. I'm going to play now some... before I play anything... Steve, do you have any updates yourself? You're a very patient in-studio guest, sometimes an impatient Huff meeting attender or attendee or attendostradosti.
Yeah, You know what? I can't think of anything offhand that has happened since we were in communication last night. Yeah, I just was I was addressing the caller's concerns about Curtis's article. I'm not really necessarily critical of Curtis. Just that my discussions with Bob Patton and several of the vets led me to believe that their real interest was in reoccupying the building they have downtown, and that some of the issues are raised to trial, if not all, had to do with disagreements about the extent of the seismic deficiencies, the amount that it would take to remedy those deficiencies, the prospect of them ever being able to reoccupy the hall, maybe on a temporary basis in those areas that are seismically safe. Those were the kind of things that they've spoken to me about, and which I certainly assumed were going to be raised before Judge Volkmann. And it was a very short trial. Maybe they just didn't have time.
I don't know. Perhaps Bob will give us some more information on Sunday if he is able to call
that
in
would be
or,
nice. Yeah,
or
be
show
great.
Up. Yeah. One of those things may happen. I did wander the streets, and I found a few likely speakers or unlikely speakers, and I'm going to play some of that now. Steve, if you have any thoughts in the middle of it that you want to, you know, interrupt with, interject with. It looks you're pointing at the clock. That means you're probably heading off to
the Planning Commission and the reading of the Climate Action Plan.
And you're going to make sure that Micah doesn't make any extravagant demands on behalf of the environment.
Well, he has to be watched.
We all have to be watched. We can never tell. Let's keep watching each other very closely.
Particularly when we're criticizing vicious, fascist
dogs. Yes. As far as I can say. Again, call in number 427-3772. Steve, thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And perhaps we'll hear you again on Sunday.
I'd like to come in, particularly if Bob's going to be in or call in, because he's always has an interesting perspective on the vets and what they're attempting to do with the vets hall and maybe what their strategy is for further down the line.
I may have to interrupt him to speed up the process of the discussion, but nonetheless, I enjoy Bob's working on these issues. And
if you said he's been a human rights activist for many years. And
yes, he helped with Bernard Klitzner and John Teelking to form the Human Rights Organization, which was a Santa Cruz homeless civil rights group for a decade.
Do you know, I'm interrupting to say that Bernard Klitzner donated $5 to my city council campaign.
I do, and I know that Bernard, who was had moved,
which
to,
I much appreciated.
He moved to Nevada, I believe, and now I last heard from him, he was in the Philippines. I'm not sure whether he's, engaging in training at a terrorist camp. Just kidding, all you
guys. These
were
$5, not the whatever currency they're using in
right.
Whatever well, other continent he
Bernard,
might have.
For those
to
who remember Bernard, a bashful Bernard, as I used to call him. And he's a kind of a soft-spoken fellow, except when he gets mad, and then he just lambastes the city council. And Bob Patton is also a rather judicious speaker, but he's also kind of a no-shit guy. I mean, he doesn't really... No bullshit is perhaps the right way to put
mm-hmm.
it. Although he seems to be presiding over a lot of bullshit at the United Veterans Council. Yeah, I know you have this Thanksgiving shindig coming up in a week now.
Yep.
That's
from today.
Next Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all set to go.
Getting all the turkeys together to give out turkeys, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Plates of food. Heaping plates of food will be at the Civic Center, the Civic Auditorium, between noon and 3 on Thanksgiving Day. All are welcome. It's a Santa Cruz Community Thanksgiving Dinner, and we're hosting it because one of the reasons that we're talking about is the vets can't get back into their building. They traditionally host that event. We're hoping it'll go back to that traditional home next year. But for this year, we have the support of the vets. We have a lot of fine people working on it, and we're going to make it a great day.
It's kind of hard to throw cold water at that kind of a wrap, so I won't even try. But you know my thoughts on that one, Steve.
I do.
Yes. I see you're wearing your Friends of Thanksgiving is that sort of buddies of the Indian killers, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Labor donated.
Yes, well put. Hey, thank you, Steve, and see you on. Maybe we'll talk to you again soon. I know we have to get together to do a settlement statement discussion. Steve is a legal eagle who's going to be helping me in my appeal of the don't sing on the sidewalk charge. So. Let's have a musical break here, and then I will be back with more, and I'll be on with you until 8 o'clock, at which point the dubious Uncle Dennis will be wending his way into the studio with From the Cream to the Dregs. Music, environmental news, occasional swig of ale, you name it. Uncle Dennis has it all, and he'll be here to share it with you.
Your mother, she taught you well. We've known it all along. She taught you how to love, right from wrong. Not to mind the different ones, be proud of who you are. Toe the line, respect your kind. She knew you'd go far.
That was another one from the Leonard Peltier album. That was called You're a Brave One. And it was sung by Joanne... Boy, looks like Shenandoah. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this show... Between hiccups is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's now just me in the studio for the next hour, or me and you if you want to call in on the line. And it's 427-3772, area code 831. 831-427-3772. I'm concerned with local community issues. I'm concerned with hooking people up with each other who want to do something about local community issues, assuming... that I have some sympathy with what they're trying to do, and I try to be broad in my sympathies, but my major focus is on homeless civil rights, police misconduct, access to public facilities, transparency of public agencies, things of that sort. And that's what I've been working on for some time. I'll probably continue to work on until I get a clue and start doing something meaningful like, I don't know, botany. Who knows? Anyway, I'm going to play some street interviews now. I invite you to join me with any comments you might have, any thoughts, any reports from the street of your own, because really, what is going to change the repressive climate downtown, the knee-jerk and often erroneous police actions against poor people for violating ordinances that have nothing to do with public health and safety, but are simply a merchant mode of giving the cops license to assert their authority and move people out of essentially what is a public zone, trying to turn it into a commercial zone. The only way we can really succeed in fighting this is if we begin to work together to resist it, to stand up to abuses of authority, to retake the community space, in effect. And hopefully that's going to happen. I mean, I'm talking about things like racial profiling when it happens, whether it's, you know, on an everyday basis or in mass events like Halloween or New Year's or any other event. And indeed, there is an event coming up on the 31st, which is 31st of December, actually, the New Year's Eve parade, which you may remember Wes Modes was the only individual punished in that parade for walking in that parade without a permit, though hundreds, if not more than 1,000, did. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. I was just listening to you. You said something about racial profiling.
Well, I don't want to make any dire suggestions.
There was a video on YouTube that just came up today, and it was of this altercation where this Hispanic lady was in a eatery of some sort, and she was having a dispute about her charge ticket. And there happened to be an off-duty police officer there with police across his back. And the caption for the video was, "Woman attacks police officer." You watch it, and she may have said a few words, but he just laid into her. He grabbed her by the hair and threw her against the counter. It was just, you looked at the title, and then you looked at what happened, and there was no connection. This guy was, and one of the things that was said was that she said something to him, and he said back to her, "You people, or people like you," meaning Hispanic-type people. And I just thought, man, when are we going to get over it?
You know, these are kinds of phrases that we use with each other. You know, they're bigoted phrases that can be used, and they're phrases that are not politically correct. The problem that comes into play when people who have badges and guns use them is that they have a truly oppressive quality. I mean, if I call you a nigger or something, you know, and you're African American, you're black, you know, you can kick my ass. If a cop does something like that, either inferentially or not, you're in a position of accepting that kind of humiliation. That's one of the problems with... It's not so much that we don't use language that expresses hostility and often traditional hatreds, or not traditional hatreds, if socially conditioned hatreds, scapegoating and so forth. We, you know, it's easier to blame a group than to look at who's really, you know, creating the bad conditions. But it's more that the people who are... If you're a person in a position of authority and you do this, it's much worse.
They weren't standing on equal ground at all.
Right. Well, I'm going to play some interviews now with people who are actually going to be reporting more of that, and you may want to comment on some of that.
Okay.
Hey, do you want to give the place where this video can be found, or Googling?
It's on YouTube. Something along the line of "woman attacks police."
Right.
If you type that into the search bar, I think that will bring it up.
Maybe a police officer posted it, or maybe labeled it or something. I don't know.
No, I think it was the guy who actually filmed it who was related in some way to something going on there. Anyway, one other question on, you know, thinking about free space and things of that nature. We had a ballot measure which would have taxed us relative to keeping the state parks open. I actually voted for that because, okay, if you're going to tax us for something, tax us for that. Did you vote for or against that?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think I was ambivalent because I realized I think I voted for it, like you did, but I think I was wary because it wasn't, you know, stipulated for that. I think it went into a more general fund, or if it didn't go into a general fund, the legislature could remove funding that already exists for parks once that funding had been provided, and so in essence it would in essence go to something else. But
yeah,
I voted for it anyway, I think, and it lost, right, as I remember.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it lost. Anyway, thanks for calling in. Call again.
Thanks.
Yeah, man. Okay. Bye-bye. And let's hear some interviews from the street, and we'll see how that goes.
And it's now around 5:30 on Veterans Day, November 11th. I'm out here in front of Borders. You're listening to some music from the Prayer Booth, Santa Cruz Revival, where they have three chess games going at one long table and coffee and soft drinks at another. This is the Sunday Church on the Street, and the spiritual menu is prayer, freedom from curses, encouraging words, spiritual cleansing, dream interpretation, deliverance, and communion. And that's Lee strumming away on the guitar with some nice sounds. And there's folks having the benefit of soft drinks and coffee and snacks in front of Borders at a second table. Both of them regulation within the 3x6x6 limitations. And I don't know if they have a permit or not, but I'm glad to see them out. They're out here. Looks like they're packing up the chess sets as dusk is falling. Daylight savings time is gone, and it's dark earlier now. A report from JP, who's, as he says, in and out of town with guitar on his back, aside from being soaked inadvertently from his pants down in the rain for inappropriate sleeping position. Says the problem street people, as you put it, have left town. The problem police have stepped back, and so it's a positive situation as far as he's concerned, although he's in wobbly health, up and down. Here's a man playing a violin at the New Leaf with a smile on his face.
All right.
Okay, not for broadcast. He says the 10 o'clock club is done. Down here on Pacific Avenue around, 9:30 in front of New Leaf. We've got a strummer and a dancer and a guy with a bike and another guy in a wheelchair.
10 o'clock means club, we're a little early.
Yeah, you're a little early, but you're under the noise curfew, so that's good.
We're musicians. We don't deal with the clocks.
Oh, yes.
No, we barely deal with calendars.
We deal with clucks, but not clocks. And over to the side, Dreamcatcher is displaying some art. A couple is chatting around the closed Asano booth. And we have Smokey Joe is strumming away.
Smoking.
Had to cry today.
And the beat goes on.
Well, here we are in the sunshine. It's Tuesday.
With Santa Cruz.
And that was the reason I played that particular number was because on Pacific Avenue there's been sort of a crackdown on musicians and there's been less music lately. And this is a group of impromptu musicians who kind of get together and play later at night, often past the noise curfew hour, though at a spot where it's less likely that people will be complaining because there's no residences there. I'm always glad to see that. However, I have a caller from Berkeley. Hey there, caller. Sign in.
Hi, yes. My name is Zachary Renning Wolf, and we're doing a 20-day tree sit in now what is called Muwekma Park, which is Ohlone for people, and we're in the famous People's Park.
And how do you spell that Ohlone name?
M-U W-E-K-M-A. And what's great is the old, the Berkeley residents have now accepted the change into an indigenous way.
You're kind of wavering in and out there, Zachary.
Yeah, I've got interference here. I'm sorry. I'm going to try to move around, see if I can't. I'm on a cell phone.
Now, are you yourself in a tree in People's Park?
No, they're actually since the longest urban tree set in U.S. history with Cal Berkeley up at the Oak Grove, which I was started and led that one, they've made a law that anybody associated with the tree set here cannot climb a tree anywhere on a UC campus.
Now, is this an internal UC regulation or a city or a state law? What is that?
No, it's passed by the UC regents who just basically brutalized the students over at the regents meeting at UCSF.
So this is a new action by the regents in recent response to the People's Park tree sit-in.
Yes. I mean, they basically do not want to have a protest. What they're most scared of, and I'm trying to get to the students' attention, that the only way to fight, you know, we're fighting apathy within the general population. We don't have lots of numbers out for the anti-war protests. So we have to be effective in small numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is, you know, basically when you're up a tree and you have three people in a tree, you can basically cover an entire grove of trees with banners constantly being in their face and being pressure on them.
So when did this tree sit begin? You're saying it's covering 26 trees and...
This one we're only covering two trees right now, but we plan to expand.
And how long has it been going on?
What?
How long has the tree sit been going on?
Since Halloween night. We basically started on Halloween, 20 days.
And give us the reason for the tree sit and what you're trying to draw attention to.
Well, both in across the nation and here in, surprisingly enough, in the city of San Francisco, I'm sure in Santa Cruz, there's a real crackdown homeless on people of color. It's a police state, and so they have such laws like don't sit, don't lie. And, you know, with this ever-increasing, I call it a depression, you know, if you check the full statistics of what actually is going on, Channel 4 said 40% of the people of working age are unemployed. So they're using statistics that basically who's applying for unemployment and who has given up looking for a job. So we're in depression figures.
So explain what those depression figures would be as distinguished from, say, recession figures.
Oh, recession. I mean, they're trying to say 12% is, quote-unquote, a recession. But if you have 4 out of 10 people unemployed who are being foreclosed on, and they're giving $7 trillion to the Wall Street, the bankers who are ripping us off of our money, I mean, it's just complete monopolization of the banking system and land grabbing people's homes right now by Chase Manhattan and all the banks that are basically doing the same thing they did in 1929, which is a controlled collapse of the stock market.
Now, do you see much in the way of foreclosure consequences in Berkeley?
In Berkeley, we have dropped, it's very funny because we're dealing with a high density issue, which is a false figure. The city has actually dropped from 126,000 to 93,000. In other words, people cannot even afford to live in the city of Berkeley. So a lot of people have moved out of the city.
In what period of time?
This is about a 15-year time. You know, when the Bush administration and, you know, 20-year time, maybe at the maximum.
Okay. But do you see signs during this time? You're not claiming there was a continuous depression. You're talking about more recent years, right?
Yeah, in recent years, you know, Berkeley, you know, Palo Alto, these San Francisco, Mill Valley are kind of considered the Zurich of the Bay Area, which is a high income area. But to actually, you know, live in these cities, it's astronomical.
Having trouble hearing you again there, Zachary. Sorry.
It's people who are, you know, anyway, I have interference on my phone.
So what was any interesting consequences for poor and homeless people as a consequence of this tree sit? Or was there anything specific that sparked it on Halloween?
Well, the whole thing is university has psychologically taken the park back. I mean, the city of Berkeley has always prided itself on the community activists controlling and looking after people's park. But over the years, the university has slowly moved in there. The city has been acquiescent to the university, and they've allowed it to take over. They're going in and indiscriminately. They see a broken branch, and they'll cut the whole tree down. And they set up, you know, these ridiculous commissions who are advisory commissions, which looks nice on paper, and, you know, it's a red herring. So they just go in, chop the trees down. They say they're looking for drug dealers, you know, and the clear vision. So they're just hacking away at the park, and we have enough of that.
Sounds like what they're doing in Santa Cruz when they changed the whole composition of the Santa Cruz Pacific Avenue after the earthquake. The police department wanted to have clear lines of sight all around, so they mowed down the trees, they removed the red brick planters on the winding road, and they put in this Ramrod Straight Mall, which has now become increasingly commercialized and, in essence, privatized. But what about Telegraph Avenue and the, you know, the response of local residents and merchants and community members to People's Park?
Well, Telegraph Avenue, they're trying to, you know, it's a constant PR campaign. We're working with, we understand that there is, you know, inherent problems when an economy goes down. The kids are, you know, have no future. This university just, its tuition for 1 year went over close to $11,000. Not even including room board and, you know, books. So, you know, they're trying to gentrify the city of Berkeley, like I'm sure they are in Santa Cruz, to basically, in 1969, when the students were well-educated in critical thinking, they basically said, we have a problem here. And so they went about gentrifying the city of Berkeley, pushing people of color, political views on out of the city and making this a corporate university where kids don't come to school to question authority, don't come to school to make a better world, but to make a buck.
Well, the response would be, we have to survive, Zachary Running Wolf.
Right.
I mean, how are we, if we have to sell soap or, you know, DDT to survive, well, what else, what can you do?
Well, when you have a, there are plenty of things to do, especially from an indigenous perspective, of alternative energy, basically growing sustainable gardens. Basically, capitalism is running out. You have capital. Capitalism needs an environment to exploit. Now, we have 2% of old growth left in the entire world, and we have 6.5 billion people eating at it, driving cars, and it's not going to last. So we have to think about cleaning up some of it, making it, for instance, we have a plastic ocean. You know, it's ridiculous. It's insane, the society we're living in, especially from an indigenous perspective.
What's been the result, if any, of any electoral changes in Berkeley in the last month? Has there been any?
Yes, we hugely affected the area of Telegraph. Chris Worthington was set to lose the election, and I predicted he jumped the trees 2 days before or 3 days before the election, that the university, who controls what we call the Sequoia voting machines. You use a paper ballot, but you stick it into a counting machine. They skewer the election results. And so George Beyer, who is proposing to put in a museum / soccer field, which is a direct attack on people's park, 41 years of resistance, got a lot of the park activists re-geared up. And so when we decided to take the trees, Chris Wilkinson all of a sudden led in the polls when he was losing badly.
So Chris Worthington, you think it turned around and won? He's the district, what is it, city councilman from the Telegraph Area Avenue?
7, I believe it
Avenue
is,
area?
Yes.
Sorry, say that again?
District 7 in the city of Berkeley.
And he's someone you support?
He's somebody that is, we would call a moderate right now. The university has gained so much influence in this community that, you know, they really play bully politics. And, you know, Chris Worthington is certainly better than George Beyer. But, you know, he hasn't showed up for support of the tree sit, guaranteed that the university is not going to develop. And, you know, people have lost their lives in People's Park. And when you look at the historical growth of the park, where it came from a gravel lot, and you look at a 60-foot redwood, 41 years old, that's something that this community needs to really protect.
So how supportive has the community been of the tree sitters, and how active have the police been in trying to crush the tree sit?
The police have come in and raided us once and took some of our equipment. They realize it's a hotbed issue. People's Park is known, you know, internationally. So they're kind of in quicksand right now because they don't want to attack us, but they, you know, they need to exercise their ownership of it. So it's a calm period right now. The police are surveillance us, but there has been no arrest and no major clampdown because we're so close to Telegraph, and a lot of people who would be otherwise bypassing us would jump into the fight.
And what's the impact on the local homeless communities up there?
Oh, they love us because they realize that we're in the park and that we're not bugging them. We're there to protect the park. We're trying to expand their freedoms, protect them from the don't sit lie ordinance that's going to be brought forward by the Telegraph Business Association. So we're actually getting very warm reception, you know, from this population that really has a grim outlook, you know. I mean, with a failing economy and no jobs and no opportunities, they're grateful that we're out there.
Now, Zachary Runningwolf, you are a longtime Berkeley resident?
Long time. I came here in 1967.
And you're also a perennial contender for political office?
I was running for mayor, but now with the Mayan calendar, where I'm indigenous leader and elder, and with the Mayan calendar coming up in 2012, the political aspirations are not there. I mean, I'm here to protect the community, but not on political level.
Are you expecting an apocalyptic activity in 2012?
No, I mean, it's a 26,000-year galactic lineup, and we go by, the tree people go by, the Hopi prophecy combined with the Mayan calendar, and what it is, simply said, is the people of the gold on these two continents, north and south, are going to lose out to the people of the corn and the wood, which would mean us, the tree people, and people like the Zapatistas, who are the people of the corn. So we're, you know, at the four directions. We need, it's a spiritual war. It's cowboys and Indians all over again. We need to learn the indigenous beliefs. So it's all encompassing. We're not homophobic. We're not sexist. And so we're trying to outreach the general population. We're doing a stop driving campaign to basically recognize to people corporate war over oil combined with global warming, all we have to do is get out of our cars. So if you go to stopdriving.org, you'll not only see the tree hit that's going on right now, but we're combined with the medicine people from the Blackfeet Nation, the Mohawk Nation, Seminoles and the Apache, or the Yene, the warrior nations. And on 9/11, we're asking people for 4 days to stop driving, to bring up a simple boycott, which would be a war on apathy.
So what can people do to support the Tree Sit and People's Park and to learn more about it?
You can go to stopdriving.org. We do have updated articles on indiebay.org. And we are looking for alternative press to come out. I mean, I think that's going to be our biggest hurdle is getting people to basically get it out. We need the corporate media to ignore us and black us out. So, you know, we always, you know, if people can drop by and give us resources, rope, climbing equipment, because that's going to be, once they do start clamping down, and we suspect they're coming when the kids leave town, in the Christmas holidays, we expect the fight to be on right then and there. So, you know, they'll be cutting our ropes, taking people to jail. Economic resources is always grateful. So, you know, we're, you know, come by People's Park. There's free food. Food Not Bombs is there. It's, you know, if anybody came up to the tree set at the Grove, it's building to that level.
How many people are actually sitting in trees right now?
Two right now.
And there hasn't been any attempt, as, for example, happened here with UC Santa Cruz, to dislodge them, starve them out, et cetera?
Oh, well, they did that here at Berkeley with us. They put two barbed wire fences around it. But at this point, they're really scared that the tree setters will combine with the students here who are getting ever so frustrated with the UC head of the UC region.
Yeah, I heard that 13 were arrested yesterday.
Yeah, and it was, you know, they pulled out a gun on him, you know.
And then pepper sprayed him as well.
Right, and here are paying students voicing their concerns and, you know, are not allowed into meetings that they, you know, they should be put in a large auditorium. And this is the University of California system governed by the population of the state of California, not by these war criminals we call the regents.
Now, is there actually much interest among the student community in People's Park and homeless people, civil rights, and police misconduct? I've been getting, I've had the fear that the students have pretty much, as you pointed out, kind of gone off into careerist kind of tracks.
Since this incident at the Regents meeting where it came home to their own lap, now they're talking, they're very concerned about police brutality. The whole time we were up at the Oak Grove, the police were able to win the psychological warfare by putting the entire police department in front of the Grove, putting a barbed wire fence around us, and scaring the students away from contacting us. And that's also the same they've done. They've done a media campaign to basically say that you'll be mugged or killed in People's Park. It's a, you know, it's ridiculous. And so it's just a ridiculous campaign that they're shooting out fear. That's what's going on. And I think as the economic times grow harder and harder, places like People's Park, which serve free food every day, are gonna be more and more valued.
So, Zachary, thank you for giving us this update. Is there anything you want to add to this?
No. I mean, just, you know, we invite people to come up to Berkeley, you know, and visit People's Park and come over to the northeast corner and see us, in the tree set. And we're violating curfew and hopefully, you know, decriminalize being homeless and poor.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Zachary, thanks for calling in. And for people who want more information, go to www.stopdriving.org or check out www.indybay.org/eastbay. Is that a good start?
Correct. And if you want to give my cell phone out, this is the ground support. It's 510 area code 878-8427.
And say that one more time.
It's 510 area code 878-8427.
Okay, that's gone out. And thanks for being on the air, Zachary.
Thank you for having us.
All right, man.
All right. Hope.
Bye-bye. That was Zachary Running Wolf calling in from Berkeley. We're going to take a brief musical break, and then I'll be back.
Loan me a minute, let me borrow your ear. I'll sing you a song about Leonard Peltier. He's gone so long in a federal jail, the innocent victim of a tangled tale. In South Dakota, where the fear has grown, the president's a watch from a mountain of stone. They say all people are free to roam. There ain't no freedom in the Indian home. How many have gone before? And tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian war? The company spoke to the high command. We need the deeds to the Indian land to dig for oil and uranium ore. Maybe have to start a little Indian war. The orders came from way on high, and if there was a job for the FBI, it won't be hard. All we'll have to do is just cause a little trouble and follow it through. In Oglala, where the spirit did dwell, was a time they remember well. There were women and children gathered there when the wind blew a warning through the whispering air. And Leonard Peltier was one of those who came to the call when the time arose. And dangerous strangers were prowling around, bringing trouble to the reservation ground. And that was when the agents made their play in a gunshot battle on a deadly day. And three men died in the hollow sand, two FBI and an Indian man. How many have gone before? And tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian war? Joe Stunts was a man that died that day, but the eyes of the law didn't see it that way. All they cared about was their own kind, gonna get somebody for a capital crime. The charge was set for homicide, but Leonard got away to the Canada side, where he lived for a while in the northern town, till they came up and got him and brought him back down. The judge and the jury, they both agreed, 2 times murder in the first degree. They pounded the gavel and they rang on the bell, 2 times life in a federal cell. Citations came from Washington, congratulations on a job well done. 2 agents gone is a mighty price, but if you want something bad, you gotta sacrifice. And
And now Leonard Peltier is a captured man, with both legs taken so he cannot stand. Well, one more swallowed by the master plan to get their hands on the Indian lands. How many have gone before? And tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian war? So it's been since days of old, when Custer died for a mountain of gold. But times have changed and passed him by. He's been replaced with the FBI. Oh, it's all so easy to weep and moan for a warfare fought so far from home. You can preach of peace from a righteous stand, but there ain't no peace on the Indian land. When Joe Stunz was lowered down, the winds did blow with a mighty sound. The answer came in the driving rain. This man will not have died in vain. For the hollow power of the lock and key ain't nothing to the power of the raging sea. The lightning strikes in the angry skies that puts the power into people's eyes. Oh, the weather is building to a mighty storm, and the words in the wind that come to warn are once more spoken to your ear. Only this time the name is Leonard Peltier. How many have gone before? And tell me how many more must be lost to the Indian war?
And that was another cut from the Leonard Peltier POW in the Spirit of Crazy Horse, Jim Page song for Leonard Peltier. He's been in jail now for at least 35 years. I'm checking over a few of the websites. There's a Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. You can look up Wikipedia for Leonard Peltier. That's P as in prison, E-L-T as in Tom, I-E-R, Peltier. Peltier, and he's Amnesty International declared him a prisoner of conscience, and he's still sitting in a cell, and here we are outside talking about him, or actually just playing a little music. I'm going to try to play something that I've been trying to queue up for a while. This is the Santa Cruz City Council. Boy, from the cream to the dregs, looks like. We're going to go from Leonard Peltier to the Santa Cruz City Council, which is what we're going to do. There was a city council meeting last Tuesday, which I understand from secondhand reports, I didn't go to it, not much happened at. Again, it was an afternoon-only session, I believe. I'm not positive on that one. But this particular council meeting that I'm going to play, I did go to, and I spoke at, and here's a little of what went down at that city council meeting. This is the second city council meeting in October.
Spence, from the mayor about the meeting. This meeting is being televised live on...
This is outgoing Mayor Mike Rotkin, who will soon be yielding the chair to probably Ryan Coonerty.
Santa Cruz County, Channel 25. The technicians are Peter McGettigan and Daniel James Howell. We want to thank them for their work in the back room, allowing other members of the community to appreciate the meeting. If you'd like to communicate with City Council members about issues coming up on our agenda, please try and get your emails, phone calls, or letters to us before 5 p.m. on Monday, because council members often have other jobs or responsibilities. We may not be able to get your message in time for the meeting if you don't get it to us before Monday night. We have rules about meeting decorum, and basically they require people to show respect for everybody else who's speaking, the same respect you'd like.
Actually, they require people to show obedience to the very tight restrictions that Rotkin, almost at his own initiative, and Coonerty have placed on public comment. And I've talked about this at length. You'll hear a little bit more of that discussion in the course of this meeting.
So there's a whole list of dire things that happen if you don't follow the rules, but I'm sure we won't need to invoke them.
Actually is the subject of a lawsuit that is now kind of had acquired some notoriety, the mock Nazi salute lawsuit, where I was arrested because I refused to leave City Council after I made a silent 2-second don't act like a bunch of fascists gesture when the mayor at that time did silence a woman trying to speak at the proper time at oral communications, shutting down oral communications early. And I refused to leave the meeting because I felt I had a right to be there, as I did. And I was arrested, falsely arrested. In that case, there was never reached trial, but we sued the City Council to try to change the decorum rules and recover money for a false arrest. And it's now kind of attorney's fees have mounted up to $200,000 now, I believe. And it's gone before the Ninth Circuit en banc panel, which is a rare procedure at the federal court level, where we're still fighting to get a trial on the issue, but the city attorney, George Kovacevic, and I say this simply candidly, made an ass of himself at the Ninth Circuit level by trying to claim that the city believed that you could not make any comments of any kind from the audience, even silent comments, even signs, even applause or hissing to anything the council did, which, of course, is entirely violates what the city council actually does allow, but also would violate the First Amendment. And he made these ridiculous comments to the with a straight face to the Ninth Circuit, and they kind of tore him apart. You can go online and hear the Ninth Circuit's caustic questioning of a city attorney, George Kovacevic. Google for Robert Norris mock Nazi salute or Nazi salute, and you'll find it eventually. And the issue of decorum at city council, or actually for me, it's repression at city council, has been a long-standing one.
We have the services of a translator for today's meeting. And if anybody needs those, tenemos los servicios de Mercedes Sheldon. Si hay persona aquí que necesita traducción en español, hay persona aquí que necesita traducción. Levante la mano, por favor. Gracias. So if you need those services, you can certainly ask for them. Are there any statements of disqualification for today's meeting?
There's the fire announcement.
Ah, sorry. Most important thing in the afternoon. I'm very pleased to make a special announcement, two announcements. We have,
and I'm going to try to skip those announcements, but in order to do that, I'm going to need to actually re-cue the tape, and there's not much time left in the show. So I'm going to turn instead, and we'll hear more from the City Council and those who are trying to have their voices heard at City Council, I being one of them, on Sunday when I come back at 9:30 to do some more chattering with you or chattering at you on the Sunday show. Back to street interviews, though, because I think those are important. And a couple of announcements. Let's see here. The Americans for Safe Access will be holding a meeting on Thursday, December 2nd at 7:15 p.m. in the Loudon Nelson Community Center in Santa Cruz. That's at 301 Center Street. Most people who are regular listeners of the show, I imagine, know where the Loudon Nelson Center is, but it's 301 Center. And it's Americans for Safe Access is concerned with medical marijuana patients' rights. And there is, of course, there has been a continuing crackdown in medical marijuana city and county-wide in the sense that there's been a ban on all dispensaries beyond the two profiteering enterprises that currently exist, where there's no real access to medical marijuana for low-income people. There's talk about providing it or requiring it at a county level, but I've yet to see that actually become a reality. And what it looks like is, again, I fear, I don't know if it looks that way, but I fear we have this reefer madness restrictions that, to some extent, was exemplified by the Proposition 19 vote statewide, although Santa Cruz and San Francisco did pass Proposition 19 by a significant margin. In any case, Americans for Safe Access meets December 2nd, 7:15 p.m. You can check that out at the Loudon Nelson Center.
In the sunshine. It's Tuesday, the 16th of November, 2010, and I'm across from the Sub Rosa talking to some sidewalk sitters and a sidewalk layer. Your name, sir?
My name is Eric Clark.
And Eric, you say that you were blessed or cursed, probably cursed, with a camping citation?
Yes, sir.
What was the story there? Were you given a legal place to stay?
No, you've got to wait on a list to get a place at the shelter.
Are you on the waiting list?
No, not yet.
And
I was actually just passing through, so I wasn't trying to take a permanent spot.
And you say you've got more than one ticket?
Yeah.
And where did you get these tickets?
Well, I got one sleeping out down by the beach. And, yeah, well, both of them were pretty close to the beach.
How many police officers were required to subdue you?
Oh, none to subdue, but just a couple to ride them.
And what did these, these were men, or were they men and women?
I think they, I don't remember. Well, I guess, same time I don't know. All men, I think. I really don't remember them all.
You're on equal opportunity. You don't discriminate, and you don't even notice.
Not always, no.
So, did they say anything to you like, move along, or you're not allowed to sleep in Santa Cruz, or get a job? Or?
Yeah, they told me you're not allowed to sleep anywhere in the city limits. Or actually, I don't know if they said city or county. I don't remember exactly.
Did they suggest, did they offer you any meth to kind of keep you going while you were staying awake?
No. No,
nothing like that. And so this is two citations.
You can look on the ground and find that shit.
Yeah, well, there you are. So there's no need to complain. All is well in Santa Cruz. Did they tell you what to do with these tickets, or did you tell them what to do with these tickets?
Well, I guess maybe we'll see one day if I tell them what to do with them.
You got ticketed twice, once on the beach and once...
Pretty close to the beach.
You're continuing your criminal career of sleeping at night, nonetheless?
Yes, of course. Yes, always. Criminal career of sleeping at night.
Well, there's just no stopping you sleepers, I suppose, you know. Anyway, we've been talking with Master Sleeper...
Eric Clark.
Thank you, Eric. We're talking with...
Pardon?
Your name again is...
Owl.
And Owl, you have something to report about a bizarre police interaction?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was sitting in front of Subway the other day, and this really beautiful lady stopped by and picked a flower out of the flower area. And the cop drove by, and he's like, you know that's illegal. And then he, like, gets out of his car, and he's, like, asking for her name and stuff.
And what was illegal the police officer was referring to?
Picking a flower.
So this was and where was this flower desecrated from?
One of the, like, sidewalk tree planter things.
I see. So the officer caught your friend in the act, your associate, this person in the act of flower picking?
Exactly.
Without a permit.
Right.
So what time did this crime occur?
Around noon.
And did the officer park his car, or did the officer simply double park the car?
Double park the car.
Because in order to stop this disastrous crime from going on.
Right.
And were they able to, did they confiscate the flower as evidence?
I don't know, I left.
You were terrorized by the whole event.
Pretty much.
Somewhat traumatized.
Somewhat.
Had you seen such kind of flower crime before?
Never.
Well, there you are. You see, luckily, you may be called as a witness in the future.
All right.
We've been talking with... Your name again?
Oh, Owl.
You give a hoot?
Yes.
Very good. Thanks. Who is this kitty next to you?
It's a kid.
It's a very small kitty.
Yeah.
Thank you, Owl.
Thank you.
Bizarre police account. Your name, sir?
My name's Wolf.
Wolf, I see you strumming on this five-string guitar.
Six-string.
And what was what happened to you in the police office?
Yeah. Well, it was an average Thursday in front of Borders, and the
Christians. A week ago.
Yeah. And the Christians come and they serve sandwiches, and we were just sitting there next to where they set up on the other side of the sidewalk where it's legal to sit, not close to any statues or anything, except for just sitting right next to the sandwich people. And this cop pulls up, and he's like, you guys all have to stand up. You're not allowed to sit there. And we all said, okay, and we all stood up. And he's like, yeah, this is my warning. So he pulls over in his car while we're all standing up, and he gets out of his car.
Did he legally park his car, or did he again block the road with his vehicle?
Well, he blocked the road for like 10 seconds while, you know, like sitting there bitching at us. And then he parked somewhat legally, where most people don't park. But he got out of his car and he came to talk to us. And he was like, you guys shouldn't be sitting there. You're going to ruin it for these nice sandwich people. And if you guys are over here making a bad image all the time, we're going to shut them down. And I was like, that's not cool. Like, you can't connect us to the sandwich people, and they don't even mind that we're sitting here where it's legal to sit. And like, why should anything we did have to decide if their charity should be shut down? And right when I spoke up, he's like, what's your name?
Aha. Did you say, what's your name, officer?
I said, my name's Cody. And he's like, what's your last name? And I was like, why am I getting a ticket? And he was like, yeah, you're getting a ticket. And I said, what did I do? And he said, you were sitting down on a sidewalk. And I said, yeah, but you gave me a warning like 30 seconds ago, and I stood up right when you asked me to, so you can't give me a ticket. And he said, what's your name? And I said, this is unacceptable. And he said, what's your name? And I said, I'm not getting a ticket. You're not giving me a ticket. And I started yelling and saying lots of really mean things, and they had to get what's that big Asian officer do, like Hawaiian-looking guy?
Yeah, it could be Officer Azua.
Azua, yeah. They had to get him to come talk to me, and he was like, we're going to take you to jail if you don't sign for this ticket. I'm going to take you to jail for 2 days. And I was like, for what? I didn't do anything.
Now, was the crowd gathering while all this was happening?
Kind of, yeah.
Was Owl there as well?
Yeah, she was there.
And she gave a hoot.
Yes, she hooed very
So you were sitting within 14 feet away from the building?
Yeah, well, I think...
That's the law, son.
Yeah.
It's a forbidden zone for your kind.
The sidewalk between Borders and, like, the other side of the sidewalk is really wide. Like, with my judging distance, I think that was more than 14 feet.
Seven squares is 14 feet.
But I think he wasn't really trying to pin us to the sitting under the buildings. He was trying to tell us we couldn't sit there because the Christians were there serving sandwiches.
Well, and he didn't want you to be indoctrinated into Christianity. He realized the fallaciousness of the Christian dogma.
Yeah,
he's trying to protect you. Don't you understand?
No, I don't think so. No way. He was an asshole when I told him that. My friend Marcus was screaming at him, too. He was like, give me a ticket. I was sitting down, give me a ticket. And he was like, no, but you were polite. And so I was like, then call him an asshole. And my friend Marcus was like, you're an asshole. And he's like, he still wouldn't give my friend a ticket, no matter how much he begged.
Oh, that
for.
Officer Azua. He
just didn't like me because I spoke my mind.
And so did you get a ticket?
Yeah, I did.
And you had a copy of that ticket with you?
No, I burned it.
You burned your ticket now. So instead of burning your draft card because you don't have any draft cards, you burned your ticket.
Yep.
Have you seen Officer Azua since and apologized to him for your unforgivable behavior?
No. I don't plan on it. I mean, if I see him, I'll be like, hey, what's up? Want to hang out? I don't know. I wouldn't have any, like, detriment.
You could offer to write him a ticket if he thought.
I could. I wonder if that would make him feel any better. Maybe be on a more even level there.
Well, you want to kind of, you know, bring these people back to earth somehow. Maybe a, I don't know, an indictment for abuse of the law, or, you know, just a selective enforcement under color of law, or violation of federal civil rights. That might give him pause.
Yeah.
So that's the only ticket you've gotten? That's a pretty slim record.
That's the only ticket I've gotten on my real name in Santa Cruz. While I was traveling underage, I got a ticket for smoking, I got a ticket for camping, I got a ticket for smoking.
I should advise you that giving a false information to a police officer to avoid justice is a misdemeanor crime, punishable by up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Would you like to make a further confession on tape to your radio audience?
I got lots of tickets that I haven't paid, but they all happened while I was under 18, and that all kind of just went away because I didn't have anything bigger than a small felony for, like, possession and... of marijuana, and so...
A felony for possession of marijuana?
Yeah, but even that went away. Like, my record's clear now, except...
You possessed 100 pounds of marijuana or something?
No, I possessed a small amount of marijuana, but it was in Utah where they make a big deal about it. And I was also caught with, like, attempt to distribute, so...
Were you also sitting across from some Mormons? Could that have been part of the problem?
Yeah, I lived close to some Mormons, but there's no way to live in Utah without living next to
Mormons. You weren't given a ticket for sitting near Mormons preaching.
No, but...
Only in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
The Enlightened City.
Yeah, of course.
We've been talking with...
Wolf.
Thank you, Wolf, or should I say... There you go. Fair enough. So here we are on the corner...
And before we got to the corner, and we're running out of time here, what Wolf probably got a ticket for was sitting within 50 feet of a change-making machine, which had been strategically placed around the Pacific Avenue in a number of places. It seems, although it's hard to find a paper trail, in fact impossible, as a social control device giving the police the power to essentially disperse people sitting down, even if they're not engaging any kind of abusive behavior. And that's what is likely happened with here in front of Borders, because most of the area in front of Borders is within 50 feet of a change-making machine. And it's illegal to sit down unless you bring your own chair, you see. Anyway, more of that as it happens. And here's some more street interviews as we run up against the hour.
SoCal and Pacific, it's Wednesday the 17th of November. We've got a man with a trumpet and another guy with a guitar strumming away, and at least six people listening, or is it five? But none of them are sitting down. They're all standing up. And it's around 15 to 20 to 1.
Now, ironically, it is legal to sit down while listening to a permitted performance. And the word permitted is ambiguous, so if you use the appropriate doctrine that defense gets the benefit of the doubt, if you're ticketed for sitting listening to a performance that is allowed, permitted, then the ticket is improper and should be dismissed. This happened to Donnie, one of our local trumpeteers, who was not performing at the time but listening to another performance in front of the Del Mar Theater or near there, and was given a ticket for sitting down. The ticket was taken to trial. The officer showed up, and the judge, interestingly enough, perhaps thanks to some good coaching from Huff, not the judge but the defendant, Donnie, was able to use the officer's testimony to indicate that he was watching a performance that was sanctioned and therefore an exception to the sitting ban. Just a little tip for all you people accused of violating Santa Cruz's bizarre downtown ordinances, or specifically its sitting ban.
And it's sort of the fading warmth of fall.
Nobody, Lord, don't you let nobody hurt me. Look, I've been here waiting. Morning, baby.
It's the same spot where Big Drum Brent got a citation on May 30th and was convicted in court by the complaint of a lawyer above Borders. But apparently all is well today, or at least no police or citizen complainants are in evidence. Celebrating the 50th anniversary of JP's mom's birthing day. What's this all about, JP?
Apparently my parents were frisky 9 months and 50 years ago.
And so here you are, 50 years older, but
And you've been in Santa Cruz now for how long?
That would be 50 years.
Not for 50 years in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, well, Coralita is close enough.
Actually, we find ourselves in Joe's Pizza. Do you prefer... Well, it's about 1:40, and I'm in front of the IQ near Logos on Pacific Avenue, talking with...
Wolf again.
Wolf, ah, yes, the howl of the wolf. You have your guitar, you have your two kitties, there's a bird observing the cats. The bird's almost bigger than both of the kitties, although the kitties are interested too. What? You have your sleeping bag, you have your guitar case, you have kitty food. It looks like quite an array of items. So what's cooking?
I'm just trying to get some Taco Bell.
And how are the merchants and the passersby treating you?
Pretty well. I've made a couple dollars in the last 20 minutes.
You think the kitties, or your the poor captive pussies you have here, are they responsible for your income?
No, they definitely help a lot, though. I mean, yeah. I honestly don't like having a bat on the street here very often because I have to keep him on a leash, which he really doesn't like. But
it looks kind of, that's a very small leash, kind of like twine leash you got there.
Yeah.
And the little kitty is not even on a leash, shockingly enough.
Yeah, she doesn't run in the street or anything. She's a lot more...
well-behaved?
Yeah, he used to be that way, but now he has more courage and he wants to explore farther, so he...
stopping this poor cat from the kind of investigation he needs to understand his world.
No, only when I can't keep track of him. Like, when I'm spanging or playing the guitar and I can't grab him if he tries to run in the street. Otherwise, like, I could go wherever he wants as long as nobody steals him and he doesn't get hurt.
But apparently when you go where you want, the police follow you.
Yeah, they don't like me.
Now, why do you say that?
Because I speak my mind to them, and it challenges their authority, and they hate it. Like, they gave me... I have two tickets now for both things I was not doing that was wrong. I didn't do anything wrong, basically. I had two tickets, and that was within the last week. So if I get another one of these misdemeanors, which is just for sitting on the sidewalk...
Infraction, actually.
Yeah, or infraction. It turns into, like, something bigger, I guess.
It might if you don't pay attention to it after a pretty long period of time. You get three of them. Well, actually, after you've got a third ticket, the fourth ticket, if you haven't attended to the first three, any more fourth infraction becomes a misdemeanor.
Oh, no. Well, yesterday, yeah, I was sitting in front of New Leaf, right? You know where those newsstands are?
Yes.
Yeah, and I was leaning up against it, playing music, not even asking for money, just playing my guitar. And one of the neat assistants, the yellow hospitality workers, came up, and she said, well, you can't sit against the newspaper stand. You can sit here legally. You're seven squares away, but...
That's not true. Newspaper racks are not part of the prohibited zone. Again, an error on the part of our hosts.
Well, even after she told me that, I was like, all right, but I could sit here, right? And she's like, yeah, just don't sit against the newspaper stands or you get a ticket. And I was like, all right. And about 10 minutes later, one of those first alarm guys on their yellow bicycles, he showed up. And he was like, well, I think I'm going to give you guys a ticket. But we were like, no, the hospitality lady already came by and she told us we could sit here. And that's like an authority symbol, so we can listen to her. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to go ask her because I don't believe you guys. So he rode his bike over to her and asked her, found her, and he found out that we were telling the truth, and he was cool with it. Mm-hmm. So then, like, 20 minutes later, a cop's driving
by. The third level. This goes up higher and higher. We got to watch out. Pretty soon the feds are going to show.
Right.
Sitting on the sidewalk. You know what that kind of means for our community.
Yeah.
It's complete devastation of our social standards.
Seems to attract a lot of attention from... authority figures and nobody else really because we weren't making much money at all. But the cops stopped in the middle of the street and start trying to talk to us and we couldn't really hear him at first. So my friend Alien Vomit, who was playing the accordion.
Alien Vomit.
Yeah. He was playing the accordion and he walked onto the crosswalk to meet the cop to see what he was trying to tell him. And the cop freaked out and like pulled over his car really fast, obstructing traffic. And also, and they got out of their car and came and talked to us, and we were like, whoa, whoa, we're like, what are you doing? And I was sitting there playing the guitar, and they were like, you guys can't be sitting here. My friend Alien Robert was standing up. He wasn't even sitting, because he has an accordion. He doesn't have to sit to play. I have a guitar. Mm-hmm. And they started hassling us and started...
How many police officers?
Two of them.
And were they both from the same vehicle?
Yeah, I know one of them was...
Winston Forbes?
Yeah, and, yeah, he was being really mean. And my friend had kind of like an anxiety attack because he was just kind of like We already had two authority figures tell us we are cool to sit there.
And the conclusion of this exciting saga cannot be told tonight because we're going to get some easy listening music from Uncle Dennis, from the cream to the dregs, or vice versa, actually, depending on your perspective. But I will be back on Sunday to give you the thrilling conclusion of this episode of the sit crime situation in Santa Cruz. In the meantime, watch your butts.
And what Robert means is bring your own chair. And I've heard that Huff is going to be having a chair drive. And they'll be collecting chairs for homeless people so that you can sit wherever you want.
Sofas, actually.
Sofas. No. That's impractical, Robert. Really? Even the homeless people would have to, you know, band together, become unified in order to carry a